Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. We have a couple of very special guests tonight, and the usual crew.
I'm Peter Leonard.
I am Rich Nicodem.
And I'm Dr. Dave DiProspero.
And we are the three paranormals.
And I'm Darius Blake.
Welcome, Darius. We actually have a pretty interesting lineup tonight. We have some fairly controversial topics to talk about, I guess you could say. And we have a full lineup of typical news, techniques, and technology. So stay with us, and we will be right back.
If you have questions, news, requests, new technology you would like us to review, team updates, event updates, or if you would like to be a guest on our show, email us at submit@paranormalinvestigatorradio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Rich Nicodem, your co-host, for another edition of Paranormal Investigator Radio. We've got a lot of stuff to cover for you tonight. Let's start off by the news, as always. If any of you are like me and spend countless hours on the internet looking at stuff that's not porn, but paranormal-related, you'll find some really interesting articles. And I did some digging the other night, and I took a look through. First of all, I came across a site called Live Science. And they have an article on there saying, are ghosts real? Well, science says no. So if any of you are in the paranormal and done investigating, you can hold your own decisions and judgments for yourself. But according to this article, they are not real. And essentially, they go on to talk about how paranormal investigators use all kinds of tools that are not made for the paranormal and ghost hunting. As we all know, many of the tools and techniques have been adopted from various other fields and used in the paranormal. And so they say with the lack of instrumentation that's specifically designed for the paranormal, and of course with our minds playing tricks on us, that there really is no such thing as ghosts. Does anybody want to chime in on that? Pete? Dave?
So in the words of my buddy Sheldon Cooper, we use hokum?
Hokum. It's all hokum. Smoke and mirrors. That's all we do in the world of the paranormal.
So I guess when that guy at that one event we were set up came at us and yelled at us about it,
was it true? Even that paranormal crap?
Why, yes, we have our own radio show.
Of course, so we are believers. Let me tell you guys why many believe, according to this article. Many people believe that support for the existence of ghosts can be found in no less a hard science than modern physics. It is widely claimed that Albert Einstein suggested a scientific basis for the reality of ghosts. If energy cannot be created or destroyed, but only change form, what happens to our body's energy when we die? Could that somehow be manifested as a ghost? It seems like a reasonable assumption unless you understand basic physics. The answer is very simple, and not all mysterious. Excuse me. After a person dies, the energy in his or her body goes where all organisms' energy goes after death, into the environment. So essentially, when we die, we get absorbed into the ground, if I'm reading this correctly. The energy is released in the form of heat and transferred into the animals that eat us, i.e. wild animals that are left unburied, or worms and bacteria if we're interred, and the plants that absorb us. There is no bodily energy that survives death to be detected with popular ghost hunting devices. Now they're kind of hitting close to home here. So while most ghost hunters engage in harmless and fruitless fun, that's what we call it, right? Fruitless
fun? Let's get out the boxing gloves. It's going to get real in a second here.
That can be a darker side. In the wake of popular ghost hunting TV shows, police across the country have seen a surge in people being arrested, injured, or even killed while looking for ghosts. In 2010, a man died while ghost hunting with a group of friends, hoping to see a ghost of a train that crashed years earlier. The ghost train did come, except this time it was a real train, and it hit him and killed him.
Oh, I don't mean to laugh, but I mean, you know, there has to be some common sense out there.
My gosh.
It states that ultimately ghost hunting is not about the evidence. If it was, the search would have been abandoned long ago. Instead, it's about having fun with friends, telling stories, and the enjoyment of pretending they are searching the edge of the unknown. After all, no one loves a good ghost story but us. So you know, in review of this, I'm probably the biggest skeptic that's out there, and that's when I got involved in the paranormal, in ghost hunting, as you want to call it. Except we like to call it paranormal investigating.
Right.
So, and after a few of my own experiences in investigating, I quickly changed from a skeptic to a believer. So, as much as I do enjoy paranormal investigating and hanging out with you guys, I mean, there could be other forms of entertainment I could immerse myself into.
Right.
So,
what about, how's it pronounced, David? Sirlan Photography?
Krillian?
It was close.
Yeah.
Where it actually shows the energy leaving the body at the time of death or hovering above the body. I mean, I know that's not a scientific equipment piece.
Well, it is.
Evidence, but...
You know, the problem that I have with this, and it's always the problem that I have when all of these skeptics kind of jump in. It's fine to be skeptical. Problem is, people have this feeling that they have an all-encompassing knowledge of everything. Even physicists.
Sounds like some former team members.
Well, you know, I have a science background, and I understand that there's far, far, far more things out there than what we understand. And I'm not talking about from a paranormal realm. I'm talking about...
Income tax?
Okay, yeah. Well, let's even talk about, like, quantum mechanics or quantum physics for a second. There's so much stuff that goes on in those fields of science that are so far beyond our current knowledge. Whenever they make some kind of radical discovery, you know, it's like an earth-shattering moment in the scientific world. And that's fine. So right there, people are conceding that they don't have all the answers out there. So for somebody to say, heck no, this stuff doesn't exist, it's just people running around, trespassing, getting themselves run over by trains... I mean, that's a little bit presumptuous in my book. I approach all this stuff from a scientific perspective, too. And, I mean, there are certain things that happen that they just defy science. You can't explain where a voice came from when there's nobody around, when there's only two people in a room, and you have a third voice that appears right next to you. Where does that come from? Is it just a mass delusion? Group hallucination? I don't know.
I actually saw a video that Chris Moon had that he had on his computer. He showed me one time. And it was taken right at the time that the person died. And you can actually see the actual life form lift up out of the body and walk away. Now, again, it's so difficult to believe everything you see in video because with all the current software out there
right.
that you can... You know, decipher images and change and stuff, but one would like to think that there are some honest people and some of the stuff that they do have is legit. But there is another site I came across where on that topic called spiritualresourcefoundation.org, and it's really interesting. It's about bridging the known and the unknown worlds. But if you ever had a question about a ghost, well, these people have all your answers. They'll tell you if you're going to become a ghost, what kind of ghost you're going to become, where heaven is, where hell is, where ghosts go.
I think I work in hell for 8 hours a day.
What ghosts are comprised of.
Overtime, sir.
And how you become a ghost. This is probably the most interesting section of this whole thing. It's who are likely to become ghosts. So everyone in our listening audience... If any of these following statements fit you, then chances are when you pass, you are going to become a ghost. Okay.
Go for it.
Okay, let's go for this. I wish I had a drum roll here. People are most likely to become ghosts after death when they have many unfulfilled desires. Okay, that's the first one. The second one is many personality defects such as anger, fear, and greed. A lot of negative impressions in the mind is the third one. A high amount of ego. Now, I know probably about 10 people right there that will become ghosts based on that one alone. They have harmed others and have the basic nature of harming others. And then one of the final reasons, they lack spiritual practice consisting of progressive level of surrender of mind, body, and intellect, done with the intention of God realization. So ladies and gentlemen, if you fit any of that criteria, you are likely to become a ghost.
I think I
be seeing you soon, Pete.
Let's hope not.
The password is Rosebud.
Yeah. But let's take a flip side of that for a quick second. Let's explore the people who will not become ghosts.
Go for it.
All right? And this is your typical criteria. Ready? Do spiritual practice with the intention of achieving God realization, the ultimate in spiritual growth. So is that why when I go to church, I see so many older people there praying to God in their elder years?
I think what you're saying is that, like, if you're good with yourself and you're all right with yourself, then you're going to pass on to the next realm. And if a ghost is what I think it is, then, like, you're, like, stuck in this realm kind of somehow. So if you have, like, issues that you haven't worked out before you die, then you're going to be, like, stuck reliving those issues, sort of, like, reliving. I guess
you get to the point in your life where you realize that death is inevitable and it's okay. It's not something that you need to fight and resist. I guess that's the point where the release happens and you cross on.
See, speaking about release, that's what scares me about death. I read all these stories about people who poop when they die.
Oh my God.
I'm terrified of that.
I think everybody does.
That's not listening here, Pete. Bowel movement is not listed as becoming or not becoming a ghost.
You have to come back and clean it up.
The ultimate purge.
Well, it seems to me that after reading this, most of it's tied to emotion. That if you have unresolved issues, like you were saying, that you have a higher chance of sticking around, if you will, you know, as a spirit, looking for something or trying to fulfill something.
Get closure.
Exactly, get closure. A couple of the reasons why you would not become a ghost is, number one, you have a low ego. So they're really tying this whole ego thing with ghosts becoming and not becoming. And another one is have less impressions in the mind, fewer personality defects. So people with emotional issues.
It's all going right back to Freud.
Yes.
It all goes back to Freud.
Exactly. So essentially, they according to this site, this foundation, they believe in ghosts, demons, devils, negative energies. And they can basically tell you which one you're going to become and how not to become it. So it's actually pretty interesting. There's a lot of, you know, Latin words in here and stuff like that they use, the spiritual terms. But
what's the website again?
It's called spiritualresearchfoundation.org. Okay? And when you do die to become a ghost, your body does take a black form as it becomes a ghost.
Oh. Shadow people.
And the color of a ghost is black because the entire body is steeped in the tama, subtle, basic component, which is the black in color. So they have some Freudian stuff in here and some spiritual terminology that you need to read up on before you really take a look at this article. But it's interesting how they believe in it and they have it all mapped out. You know,
that's awesome.
If you follow these basic directions, you will or will not become a ghost.
So now you've got my curiosity. The black cloudish type of thing. So does that mean that a spirit is like a black hole that's sucking energy in to take that black form? Next.
I don't think that's quite what it meant, but
I think it's more like another dimension that, like, we're not
privy to seeing.
Privy to see. Like there's more dimensions than three, and if if you're not in the fourth dimension, you're not going to see the fourth dimension thing. You might see shimmers of things.
That's why they say that veil may be very thin, and every now and then you can see past it.
And getting back to your point, Dave, string theory only works in 11 dimensions.
Wow.
About quantum mechanics, you know?
There you
go. So like, we're missing like 8 dimensions that we can't necessarily observe with our limited...
They've got to be somewhere, and they have to account for something. So.
Exactly.
Not to become all Sheldon on you here, but... isn't string theory and all that, again, it's all theoretical physics?
Yeah.
It's like ghosts. There's a lot of theories.
Yeah, but it's based on theory, but some of it has actually been applied, like the quantum leaps. A research institute in London actually teleported a particle, entangled particle, from one side of the Thames to the other side, from a research institute at one location to another. And they actually observed it. They noted the time, and they noted the spin, and they were able to record it. So, I mean, the stuff that
is theoretical is very slowly becoming, you know, practical physics. It's just at a very
modern Star Trek kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, technology booms. It goes through a very slow period of growth,
yep.
And then there's a huge boom. Like, we see technology in the last 40 years like they've never seen before.
Right.
And that came out with the very slow but progressive invention of the transistor.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, boom, we have everything from iPads into cable TV to
quantum
computers
leaps.
To quantum leaps into this radio show. So
I still carry a beeper with me.
I actually found my beeper the other day. Remember those from the 90s? No. Honestly, that's why I'm saying, with all the crazy stuff that's out there technology-wise, all these great revolutions in technology that are, you know, making their way into the forefront, people can't say no. There's no way to say that something definitively does not exist. I'm the biggest UFO skeptic out there. I've never seen one.
Well, you haven't met me yet, so...
Well, I mean, there's... The level of people out there that are saying that this is garbage, there's nothing to this paranormal crap, that's what I would say to the UFO stuff, but, you know, doing what we do, knowing what we know, and knowing enough to know that there's a lot of stuff out there that we still have no conception of, I'm confident in saying that all things are possible, if not plausible.
But, you know, you've got Bigfoot, you know, the crypts and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I believe more in Bigfoot than I actually do of actual UFOs.
Well,
however,
right.
Exactly. I was watching a TV show last night, which they threw another one curveball at me, and then now they're talking about reptilian people.
Oh, where's Eric?
Oh,
when we need him.
Okay,
oh, yes.
So
yeah,
is this
yeah.
directly tied to the whole UFO thing, or is this
yeah.
a whole nother category of paranormal?
They are the second most reported species of alien, believed to be alien. First are the actual grays, which are the almond-shaped-eyed, black-eyed,
the typical
grayish.
Very typical alien.
The reptilians don't actually have that kind of form. They're described as animalistic and very malevolent. Then there's the blues, which look exactly like the grays, but they're very malevolent. And then there's the Nordics, or the Aryans, which are the giants, the Nephilim. Stop me before I reference again.
Well, that's probably a subject for a whole other show we
yeah,
can do with the reptilians, but yeah, that was just something new that just completely blew my mind. I'm like, okay, I'm just finally getting a grasp on the whole Bigfoot thing
yeah.
and, you know, the UFOs, because now I hang around all these people who are UFO fanatics, so now I'm starting to learn that. Now I get thrown into reptilians.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned Bigfoot, because I came across an article the other day which was entitled, Maybe Bigfoot is just blurry. And that's a reference to a joke that was made by a comedian probably a decade ago. He was a very young comedian and he died very young. I don't remember what his name was. But the point of this article was that there's no proof that Bigfoot exists, because all the pictures and all the videos, it seems like everything is crystal clear in the videos, but then Bigfoot comes out and it's just a blurry mass. And they said, well, maybe he's just blurry.
Which ties in with the interdimensional or the astral beings and all that
Maybe.
Stuff, where we're just seeing glimpses of them.
Yep.
And we've said it many times, even here, that when there's UFO sightings, Bigfoot sightings, you're usually right behind it.
So what you're trying to say is that you think that Bigfoot could possibly be an alien.
It is actually in the Valley classification system, one of the on-the-ground sightings does ask if there's paranormal activity involved with the UFO sighting. It could be anything from ghosts, spirits, crypts, or Bigfoot.
Won't we all be surprised?
Cryptids.
Won't we all be surprised if we find this is all tied into one thing?
Well, again, there's so much that we don't know, and we do know that, you know, certain bits and pieces do correlate to other things. The chances that all of this could be tied in together, I mean, it's very valid. It's a possibility.
So everybody enjoyed my term crypts.
Crypts,
so.
Yeah. No, the crypts are not involved.
No, next, we'll be talking about the Bloods when we come back.
That's going to be all over the internet.
Investigator Radio on BDSRadio.com.
All right, guys. I actually have a very unique piece of information here to share, and it's more like a question. I want to get your input on this. And there is a paranormal tie-in to this, so just bear with me for a minute. Anybody hear of the Frankenburger?
I want to say yes, but I don't know where I've heard that.
And you're making fun of me for saying the word crip, trying to create my own language, and you're asking me about a Frankenburger.
Burger. That's right. Okay, so Sergey Brin of Google fame, one of the Google co-founders, put up $330,000 to a research lab overseas in the UK to develop a test tube hamburger. No? Nobody? Nothing?
I saw something on that on RT. $330,000. $330,000.
All right, so now if anybody in our listening audience is curious about this, before I go any further, Google Frankenburger. It'll come up. So what the goal is ultimately here is to create a inorganic, organic food substitute. So for all these developing countries that are, having food shortages, and just in case there's any kind of, global crisis where food becomes scarce or unavailable, the goal is to try and develop a scientific, chemical-based method of creating food. So here's the problem. In order to create Frankenburger, they actually used stem cell technology. So now stem cell technology is, in and of itself, a very noble and well-known science, but the application that they used it for has caused some kind of controversy. There are people out there that are under the misconception that this burger that they created was actually a living organism that took the shape of a burger. Actually, what they did is they created thousands of strands of this bovine muscle fiber and combined it all up in this petri dish and let it replicate and grow. And it's a pure organic, compound, which had this like grayish gelatinous consistency, kind of like brain matter, I guess, one person compared it to. So what they did is they added beet juice to it and saffron coloring, and they gave it, the actual look and feel of a beef patty, and they grilled it up. And they have a live video where they're doing this. They actually, had some kind of big press event for this. And people tasted it. And what they said is that the mouthfeel of it, the feeling in your mouth is that of a hamburger, ground beef. But the taste is very bland. They said it almost has a base of like a pasta, almost like plain pasta. So it was edible. And they were able to grill it, but they hired a professional chef to cook this, and he couldn't get it to sear. So he just kept adding butter, more and more butter. So this thing had 30,000 calories in it, but actually, that number 30,000, each burger, to create that burger, that one patty, was $30,000.
That's insane.
So,
and it doesn't even taste like chicken.
It doesn't taste like anything. They said it was very bland, and they said it was a very good starting point for further research. It was void of all muscle, or I'm sorry, of all fat, so the fat would have given it some kind of flavor. We all know that beef has its flavor from whatever the cow eats, so since there was no cow involved, there was no flavor, also from some of the blood, but there was no blood involved. It was just pure bovine flesh cells, or muscle cells.
So the reference Star Trek again, we're getting closer to those pills?
To the
food synthesizer.
Food synthesizer, right, a replicator. You tell it, I want a burger, and it gives you a patty. You just have to cook it. And Rich is watching the video right now of when they cook this thing. So why am I talking about this? Well, there's been a lot of debate about this. Was there an organism involved at some point that had some kind of consciousness? Was this something that was alive that was developed for the purpose of sacrifice? So that's one area. The other area, and I found this on a paranormal website, we all know that
there's a lot of debate out there about how people derive psychic abilities. And they say that these people who are gifted must have something different. They must have a certain gene that enables this, or a certain, I'm going to say defect in the brain, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean that there's a certain region of the brain that has developed differently than, you know, a normal brain, because by and large, the majority of the population does not have or cannot tap into this.
A brain?
A disability.
What is a normal brain?
Well, exactly, exactly. But the debate out there with regards to the paranormal is, if scientists are able to isolate this gene and can mass replicate it, much the way they did this burger patty, would this gene be something that people can consume, either in a pill form, I'm sure not in a burger patty form, but in a pill form or as a liquid or something, that could spark or stimulate the ability to perceive psychic events or telekinetic abilities or anything like that. Any thoughts on this one, guys?
You left me speechless.
I'm going back to crypts.
This is very weird.
Are the condiments going to be cloned too?
The guy did say that it's very difficult to determine whether the burger tasted normal or not, because he said in the last 30 years, he can't remember the last time he just ate burger without mustard or ketchup or onion or anything like that. So, who knows?
Yeah, I think hamburgers are pretty bland without all that stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they're just the stupidest, ugliest animals that we can catch. Or they were at one time.
That's true. That's true.
So I guess, from a paranormal perspective,
we go back to the age-old question, where does life begin or where does it come from?
That's true.
Yes, I can see that debate becoming probably a constitutional law in our country that we can't have synthesized stem cell...
stem cell burger patties.
So much for trying to make an attempt to get McDonald's as a sponsor.
Oh, that was great. No, but I guess a lot of what people are arguing is, number one, how do you test psychic abilities? Of course we know that there are tests out there. There's some very well-known tests that universities have developed to try and isolate people who have psychic abilities. But above and beyond the testing, once somebody is actually confirmed to have psychic abilities, if that's at all possible ever, how in the world do you go about isolating the cause of that gift?
Did you not watch The Conjuring, man?
Oh my goodness, The Conjuring. We'll talk about The Conjuring when we come back.
Well, let's talk about drugs. I guess I got to give the disclaimer first. We do not endorse and or promote the use of any type of illicit Schedule 1 narcotic or anything like that. But to break into this, I'd like to return to Darius, his A Clockwork Orange DVD, which pretty much sparked this episode. It was the last on my list of very weird 1970s movies that I had to see. So that's like an Emmy introduction there. Oscar, it starts off with a weird drug.
I don't recall the drug that starts in Clockwork Orange, unfortunately, but
it's some kind of milk.
Oh yeah, the milk fire. Yes, milk is a weird drug.
So we're going to talk about DMT, and it's not a professional wrestler, right?
Yeah, or a rapper.
It's a dimethyltryptamine, and it's one of the most powerful hallucinogens known to man, and it's been used in religious ceremonies for thousands of years, and we have it in our bodies. It's made of hydrogen, carbon, and nitrogen, and it's really has the makeup close to our neurotransmitters, and it's pretty wild experience. I've only ever had an experience with it once, and it kind of rocket shipped you out into space, I guess, is the best way I can correlate it.
Well, wait, tell us first, what are some of the side effects of this drug? I mean, why do people take it? What does it do to you?
It kind of puts you in another dimension. It's like you hallucinate, kind of like LSD, but it's more powerful. You kind of hallucinate like LSD, but it's a little bit more powerful. I kind of like correlate it to like LSD. DMT is to LSD like LSD is to kind of like aspirin.
Well, now that is a unique analogy, right there.
What does that have to do with the paranormal? I'm just
well. Well, when you smoke this stuff, and you can extract it from, like, everything. It's highly illegal. I don't recommend it. There's,
This was a scientific stuff.
Yeah, I've looked in on internet, and there's many ways to extract it, but it, like, involves lye and a bunch of corrosive chemicals. I don't recommend getting into that at all. But if you want to search it out...
I do have some extra lye. I'm making soda.
The internet is available. But it like almost put me in another dimension where I was like the reality in front of me went away and I was like out in space and I was on this like path and it was, and there's this ruin, like ancient language, like these letters and these words that were like, certain words were like bright and they were like unmoving, but the letters were spinning. It was very strange, but it was like not harmful in any way. It had no, like 20 minutes later I was like back to normal. That is, but that kind of fits into the paranormal because we were talking about other dimensions.
I got you.
And it's like, what is really going on? You know what I'm saying? Like the limited perceptions. Who's really running stuff? Kind of like, is this like some network of like ancient alien beings or ghosts or whatever, running things and like making sure the earth spins? And it's just really,
now this wasn't like a dream.
No, this is. But what there is, a lot of people out there think that the pineal gland, third eye, produces DMT when you go into REM.
Oh.
And that's what's responsible for dreaming.
Okay.
And that's why it's so like hard to like explain the experience. You know what I mean? You wake up and the dream is like, well, I was here and then.
But clearly you remember. You remember stuff that happened,
yes,
during the experience.
Yes, absolutely. And
I do believe that DMT is naturally occurring to some extent in the brain, and that is one of the things with sleep.
It's definitely everywhere. It's like in plants, and you can extract it, and it's in people. And I mean, I don't know.
Well, we don't recommend people extract.
No.
Right, don't extract it from the people.
Although that could use the stem cells for hamburger.
Well, there you go. You could. Now you had this experience quite a while ago.
Yes,
and I remember reading this entire, you know, story of what happened, and it was a crazy, crazy story. I mean, it was like you can't make this stuff up. It was really vivid details about what you remembered from this experience.
Right, and that was only minutely of what was going. There was just, it was century over. You know what I mean? There was fractals and like chips and there was a presence too. It was like, you know, because like when you smoke DMT, there's a point where you can stay conscious or like you feel a presence when you smoke this stuff, and like a weird fog comes over like everything, and you like have a choice. You can stay awake and just like trip out and look at the funny walls doing things, or you can let this thing take you. And I was just like, well. You know, I'm open-minded.
When in Rome, do as the Romans?
Yeah, kind of, you know.
Would you describe it like a plasma-like? How do I want to describe it? Like an astral travel. You usually see like a
definitely.
Plasma-like material that you're traveling.
Like the traveling through time thing? Not really. I was just like rocking it. I was like, it was like in a blink of an eye, I was where I was. The coming back was the weirdest thing. That was like, seemed to take like 5-10 minutes before I was, you know, people were talking to me, I was like, blah, 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 blah. No understanding of what, you know, people in front of me.
Oh, you mean like actual people?
Yeah,
that were
like
in the room
after
with you?
I woke up, yeah.
Oh,
I was like, you know, and then it was like 10 minutes before I could even understand what these people were saying. what did you see? You know, what's going on? I'm just like, it's something I wanted to just like ruminate on, kind of not ruminate, but just think about like what the heck just happened.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And but I do have to say, there's been no harmful effects, and I was a much happier person afterwards.
Now we gotta say, Darius is not a drug user or you know, a criminal or anything of that nature. This was an experiment in a controlled environment. People were there. People were aware of what was going on. Yes. It wasn't like it happened at a frat party or something like that.
Right. It's definitely not a recreational thing, and kids who want to do it just to have fun, it's kind of silly, but you know what I mean. But it is
heavily used in South America for religious purposes.
Yeah. All right, so this is a ritual drug.
It's sort of like a Native Americans.
Not in the smoking form, though.
Okay.
They have this stuff called. See, with DMT, the liver synthesizes it, like, really quick.
Yeah.
That's why it lasts, like, 20 minutes. But there's this ayahuasca vine that has MAOI inhibitors.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't synthesize right away. So it lasts from, like, 2 to 8 hours. And there is churches in the United States where it is legal.
Really?
Yes. And there's one in Oregon. I think there's one in New Paltz, actually. But I've, you know, just, like, could it interest me. You know, back in college, I did all my First Amendment reports on peyote. So, you know,
now let's talk about the temporal effects here, like how long, time-wise, things lasted. Did it seem like a very short experience while you were experiencing it, or did it feel like you were there for hours and days, or?
It did seem many hours it seemed like I was there. And I don't know if it was just from the sensory overload,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean, all the stuff was coming at me. It lasted like 2 minutes. 2 minutes.
Reality 2 minutes time. Our time, yes. Right.
Two minutes our time. But who knows, I could have been in another dimension, you know, finding things.
Well, that's interesting, because there's a lot of paranormal people out there, and right now I'm thinking of John Edwards, the famed psychic medium.
I sense a D guy.
Yeah, well, yes, yeah, exactly. Is there a D? Anybody with it? Okay. So, in his book, he was writing about an experience where he was waiting for his mother, I believe, to come back and speak to him after she passed. And it was years and years and years. And before she passed, they had like a code word and a scenario. And he was somewhere in a psychic fair. And a psychic approached him all these years later and said, there's somebody here who wants me to tell you about, you know, this code word, whatever. And, I mean, that was it. He just went nuts. But apparently the information that was given is that on the other side, the mother did this instantly. Instantly made contact after she passed. But in our frame of reality, I mean, it was like a decade that had passed.
Wow.
So it's very interesting to hear people talk about when they have these odd experiences, or, you know, drug-induced, you know, experiences, about what the perception of time is during the experience as opposed to what it is in reality.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, if from the other side it was a second and it took a decade, mine was like the exact reverse. Or,
the opposite,
opposite, yeah. So.
To quote in a 1980s movie, Beetlejuice, didn't that happen where they thought they were only gone for like 10 minutes and it ended up being a month or so?
I can't remember anything about Beetlejuice feet. Beetlejuice.
That was also in that dream movie there with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, Insidious, yes, that was that. It's still a movie I'm trying to figure out. Was he awake or was he?
I didn't see it.
Spoiler alert, sorry.
Oops.
He does it all the time.
Boy.
So this was a one-time thing. This was something you experienced one time, and you just said, that was it. I wanted to know. Now I know, and it's
yeah, kind of. I mean, if it wasn't a Schedule One, I'd be facing 20 years for possession.
Well,
I'd probably try it again. Yeah, you know, I would, you know, but because there's no harmful effects. There's no, like, I'm Superman and I'm gonna jump out the window, you know, and.
Were you basically in the same position you started from when you, like, were you in a chair? Or
yeah, well, yeah, or? I definitely was sitting down because, I somebody who was with me.
This was
knew.
A planned
yes,
situation.
It was planned. Yes, and so you know, I just sat right on the couch and inhaled the stuff and had that 10-second thing where like it almost felt like kind of like I was dying, sort of. We, you know,
that's not
like,
good.
Like, no, you know, it was like good. Something like that I've never experienced before. So I was like, you know, my ego was immediately like, hey, you better step back.
Carefully, I told you about egos before.
Yeah. So obviously, I went with it. So I kind of got the ego out of the way and had the experience. And it was like it seemed like something ancient, like that's been here for like ever since like the primordial soup or whatever, however you want to, whatever your belief system is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like been around forever. It's like almost an overseer of us, of everything, because it's everywhere. And
yeah.
How I actually heard about DMT was the Joe Rogan Experience. He's a big proponent. The Joe Rogan
really?
Experience podcast, yeah.
Okay.
And then I went on the internet and...
I loved him on Fear Factor, by the way.
News Radio.
That was great. I love that. He's got a new show out, Joe Rogan.
The Joe Rogan Questions Everything
yeah,
or something like
yeah.
that. Yeah.
First episode was Sasquatch, actually. And then the second one was Chemtrails.
Come on, let's leave Sasquatch out of it.
Yeah.
We'll be going on Chemtrails.
So,
now, you know, it's funny, you mentioned something, though. There's, and I'm going to screw this up, and I apologize for those people listening. Either genetic memory or evolutionary memory or something to that effect. It's the belief that ingrained in us, in our DNA and in our psyche, is all of the history of where we've evolved from. And if we meditate or find some way to tap into it, we're able to not interact, but experience a lot of the stuff from, you know, our evolutionary past. So by you saying that it felt old and it, you know, it was familiar or you know, it may be some way of tapping into that genetic memory.
It's just- That I believe that as well. We're like some kind of crazy digital recorder to be, for sure. You know what I mean? It's
this conversations has not gotten weird at all.
That is a good topic for another show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Recently, a gentleman did a genealogy on our family, the Leonard side of the family, which I've known the man for years. Never knew that he was actually related until he started doing the genealogy. Come to find out, we're distant cousins. But when he handed me this printout of like 200 pages of all the people that were actually related to, Obama being one of them.
Thomas
Jefferson. Knew you were reptilian.
Yes. Yes. But it's weird. There's people in there like Herman Melville. Is that where I get my writing cue from? But the one you're talking about, genetic code, was Robert Gould Shaw, who was the colonel of the 54th Massachusetts, who led the first African-American regiment in the Civil War. I love that movie. I've watched it maybe 150 times. Was I watching it because I was looking at a distant relative? I mean, you talk about weird connections and weird... Clint Eastwood has Leonard Ludden. John Wayne. I love John Wayne.
That's weird.
But I didn't mean to get off.
No, that's good.
Is that something ingrained in us?
That's a topic.
Genetic code? I mean,
and the other thing is like past life regressions. I'm a big fan of past life regression. I took 3 or 4 classes on past life regression from a, you know, extension center locally here. And it was fascinating to listen to the lady who is a medium herself and actually has a clinic where she professionally performs past life regressions. We did this in the class, and the class was like a 3-week class, and I tried it many, 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 many times, and I couldn't experience a darn thing. And she said, You're intellectual and you can't get out of your own head and you need to release and this and that. And I mean, I couldn't do any of it. But listening to these other people, like before the class started, they went around the room asking why people were there, what they thought they knew, what they thought they were connected to. And listening to what they said before the experiences and then listening to what they derived after the experiences, you know, again, we don't know everything. So there may be something to that, and it's very interesting. I know myself, like Pete has a huge connection to the Civil War and all that stuff. Mine is medieval history.
Well, Yeah, I mean, I never knew my dad because he died when I was three, but how many times my mom says, oh, you're just like your father.
No.
How yeah. is that? You know, I didn't have the environment to where, you know, I was beaten in with an inch of my life. I didn't get up on the roof or whatever, you know, but it's like, I like chess. He liked to read the classics like Plato and things like that. And I love that. It's, you know, it's all I like to do is read, write. You know, if I could play guitar, I certainly would. I love the guitar. It's my favorite instrument, you know, and he was a guitar player. It is very strange.
There's a lot about the brain, a lot about genetics that we have no knowledge of. I do have to laugh, David, because I'm laughing inside. As you were talking about the past life regression, I was remembering that scene from the Albert Brooks movie there, where they were in heaven, and everybody was being judged or whatever, whether they could go up to heaven or not. I can't think of what it was called. But they all went into a chamber to see who they were in their past lives. And in one scene, he was like this African tribesman running from a lion. And that was the mental picture I got when you were talking about
that. That's great. I like that. That's all right.
Defending your life.
Okay.
Yes.
I've never seen it, but it sounds like a good one.
It is pretty funny. I've seen it many, many years ago.
Well, that's been an interesting topic, Darius, and we're very happy that you were able to come on and tell us about that.
Well, if anybody's interested and wants to research more, if they go to YouTube, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, DMT, it's like a 5-minute excerpt on, you know, what it is. And this guy, Graham Hancock, who's wrote, like, Fingerprints of the Gods and stuff like that, he actually went to, like, Peru to the religious and did the ayahuasca, and he said he'd smoked cannabis for, like, 20 years, and the ayahuasca told him, you know, don't do that anymore. And he hasn't spoke since. And it's can use for like drug. I think the possibilities for the stuff are almost infinite. And I think it's our Western culture, the mind control thing that, you know, they don't want us. It's taboo in this culture to do stuff like that. And I appreciate you guys for having me on. And
just one more gigantic disclaimer: we do not recommend, suggest, or in any way promote drug use of any kind. This is merely for informational purposes only.
And I'm so completely lost. I still don't know what the hell it is. So.
it's the spirit molecule. That's another thing that was hosted by Joe Rogan, DMT, the spirit molecule. It's like an hour thing. It's got Rick Strassman actually did studies in the early 90s, and it just goes through, like, you know, they can't figure it out either. So don't feel bad, Rick, because nobody can. It's just like out of this world, and it's peaceful, and it's good, but I think our Western culture is like...
I get that same sensation with a bottle of Jack Daniels.
See, we were programmed to believe that, though.
That's my DMT, JD.
There's probably some in there, actually.
We need to take a quick break.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Whether you're an investigator, enthusiast, or ethereal spirit, we are bringing you the information from this realm and beyond. You are not an investigator, but you. Your hosts, Peter Krishnick, Dr. David
Dino. Welcome back, everyone. That was an interesting subject. We talk about DMT and drug use in the paranormal, so... Again, many disclaimers were said, and
now we know everybody abides by that. Next convention, huh?
Yeah.
Apparently, nobody's ever been to a paranormal convention.
Never. So let's move on and talk a little bit about technique. Here at RIP, we have a lot of different pieces of equipment. Some of the stuff Dr. David has actually developed for us, and many of it is stuff that we use that's commercially available, stuff that many other groups are using. But we always talk about some of the things that we don't use in our investigations, some pieces of equipment we all had on our wish list. Well, one piece of equipment I had on my wish list is called an EM pump, and I really wanted to get one of these. I did some research online, and based on a lot of the stuff I read, it's supposed to enhance EVPs, enhance photography of the paranormal when it's used. So I went online to Ghost Outlet, and I actually bought one, and it was around $50 with shipping and everything. Anything was too bad. So I saw the picture on the site of this thing, and there was nothing to put next to compare. You know, on cereal boxes, they show a piece of the cereal and say, this is the actual size? Well, when I actually got this thing, I thought it maybe was 6 inches by 6 inches. It's actually like
the size of a matchbook.
Yeah, it's like 3 inches by 3.5 maybe. So
I think Steve will let you use his Pelican case for that.
So I need to go buy a new case to house this bad boy. But nonetheless, we actually used it on an investigation Saturday night. Before I get to there, let me tell you a little bit about how this thing works. Again, it's called an EM pump. It's very small. And when you turn this thing on, a light will start to flash very slightly to start with. And then it'll start out producing a 0.2 hertz all the way up to a 256 hertz pulse. Now, as this pulses up to a higher frequency, the LED will become brighter. So what does this do? It's great. It's got the little light going on, and if you put your K2 meter up to it, and I mean, you have to go up to it pretty close, this size. It'll peg it right to red. So it's got some juice to it. So what does it do effectively? It creates a low-level magnetic field, a magnetic white noise, if you will. Some of the theories are that this is a beacon for spirits. So if you can imagine, they're in the dark looking around, and all of a sudden they see this pulse of light come out, they come to it. So kind of like a bug zapper, if you will. For moss, but that's one thing.
That's a hint, David, the ghost zapper.
There you go.
No, we don't want to hurt it.
He's already writing out blueprints.
They do use UV lights.
They do.
The other thing is that this can also be used as what they call a sacrificial battery. And they did this on Ghost Adventures. I remember seeing this episode. So a lot of times when we're investigating, we'll have our equipment and also the batteries will go dead. And then we'll leave, come back later, and the batteries are good again. So this is kind of like sticks it out there and say, hey, ghost, here you go. Try to suck the juice out of this thing and try to manifest or do what you want to do. So that's kind of another theory for this thing. And actually, when we did our investigation of the Halbert House, in one of the rooms up on the third floor, we set it on a bed and we left it there and we started doing some Frank's Box sessions. And some of the investigators started to note some activity. Pete, you can share some of the stuff that went on with that.
Without giving like scientific, how do I put this, backup, there was one point where I saw the moving pixelation cloud, as I always describe to these guys. I'm like, there's something standing in the doorway. But at this particular point, I don't know if you remember this, I actually pointed at it and said, it's standing right there. It's looking right at me. And I actually saw a white cloud move towards me. Now, at the same time, the ladies that were in the room with us also saw the light on your EM pump get blacked out, not go off. They saw something cross past the door. And those are two ladies that have never been on an investigation before. So, I mean, for them to actually see that, I'm convinced that it does something. I'm not sure what it does, but...
Well, and the other thing is, when we were in the basement, we actually used it too, where we thought we were seeing some shadows. And we placed it over there, and we started to see more shadows. The point, again, the two young ladies are with us that really had no experience in ghost hunting were actually pointing out to us they were seeing the shadows moving around. And they kept saying, is there somebody standing right there? I think there's somebody standing over there. So, I mean, if you want to take that as I don't know, a disclaimer for it or a reason to buy one, it seemed to do something for us.
I mean, we have a ton of audio to still listen to, so I'm not sure if we have EVPs or anything, but after you juice the room, if that's what we're going to call it, when Alex and Steve went up to do Frank's Box after we went into the basement area, they were getting some incredible hits, apparently, on the Frank's Box, so I don't know if it brought something residual out, or, like you say, it was the sacrificial energy it needed to manifest.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's interesting how that could be. But the other thing is that you can also find these online that are actually AC powered, and they're much bigger, and they will really fill a room up with some energy. So, I mean, that might be something we want to take a look at too. But to be honest with you, for the $50 I paid for it, I'm still kind of on the fence. I mean, I'll take it right now that it was a coincidence that this stuff happened with it. I don't know. We'll take it on a few more investigations to see if it does anything. And maybe if we get a couple more and stick them all in the room, I mean, if that will encourage or help spark some more activity.
Yeah, I think with any piece of equipment, you have to really take it through its paces.
Oh, absolutely.
You have to use it on multiple investigations, use it for multiple devices.
But the thing that impressed me most, I thought it was going to blow the K2 and the Melmeters right out from a relatively short distance. But, I mean, you'd have to be right up on there for that to actually start triggering.
Yeah, I think there's like a 6-inch to 12-inch bubble.
4-inch.
Four inches,
yeah.
So I guess depending on the device and what equipment you have, what else you do. And I've told people many, many times, anything that has a motor in it, you could use as an EM pump. So if anybody's out there listening and wants to try electrifying their environment a little bit, if you don't want to go out and get an EM pump, you could take the blades off of a fan or just bring in a DC motor, anything like that.
Well, the way I sweat, I would use the fan.
Yeah, he would use the fan, right?
Well, there's a lot of plans on YouTube where
yeah.
people post on there. You can build these things.
Yep.
And I might try that too as well. So.
Well, we're almost out of time, but before we go, I just need to point out that we are doing a presentation this weekend on UFOs.
UFOs.
We haven't done this one in a while, so it should be interesting.
Yep.
Get the mothballs out of PowerPoint.
That's right, I guess.
But it's at the Woodgate Community Center. I believe it's 7:30. That's up near Old Forge. Very nice town. Very nice people. We had fun last year when we did the Paranormal Cousins.
Mm-hmm.
Hey.
Oh.
Use guides.
And it is free. I believe I said that four times already.
Saturday?
Saturday.
The Saturday.
7:30.
Woodgate Community Center.
August 10th?
I don't know.
I believe so.
It is the 10th, yes.
Just Google Woodgate Community Center. It's a one intersection town in the North Country of New York.
You know what? The people, when we did the paranormal presentation, the people were really nice there. Very, I mean, they sat there, and by the looks of them, I was like, oh boy, I can tell right now they're going to start raising their hands and bringing everything we talk about, you know, cutting it up. And but they were very attentive. They listened. They asked intelligent questions, and they're very appreciative of it.
And they do, there's a large belief in UFOs, Sasquatch, Bigfoot, and the paranormal up there, so that's our kind of town.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we just want to thank you all for tuning in for this episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. We are your hosts,
Peter Leopard,
Richard Crypt Nicodem,
Dr. Dave DeProspero, and our special guest,
Darius Blake. Peace within.
So we will see you in 2 weeks. Feel free to visit our website, paranormalinvestigatorradio.com. Have a good one.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. Be sure to visit us online at paranormalinvestigatorradio.com. Until next time, have a good day and stay spooky.